or it could be another. I have two parts.
Two parts. Okay. So I lost my train of thought, so we'll just continue somewhere. Okay. as long as my father doesn't ask me to repeat what he missed. Okay. Because I don't know where I stopped. You know, it's like when you're on the phone and you're talking and all of a sudden you realize, like, no one's been there. What? Is that him still? Is it on or no?
Can you hear us?
No. Oh, 1 second. Okay. Yay. We got an extension cord. If I knew there was going to be an intermission, I would have brought refreshments. That's my brother-in-law.
The other chair.
Yeah, because then they couldn't see.
Now they can see and they can hear.
There we go.
All right. Okay.
Are we good to go?
Yes.
They see me?
Can they? I don't know.
Can you hear at least?
We can hear you. We can't see you. It's all right.
It's all right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so just listen. You know what I look like. Okay. Okay. So, trying to collect my thoughts again. Restart. Salvello Kim, yes, thank you. So, thank you. So Aaron, they recognize in Aaron his love for them and their Salvello Kim and their inner drive for something which was holy and something which was special. And yes, that was the draw of my mother, that people recognized within her that there was something special about her. She was very non-judgmental. She was very open. She was very caring and considerate. People felt that they could open up to her. And it became a standing joke in our family. She would call and say, oh, I was on the bus today. Guess what happened? And we go, I know, Ma. Someone sat down and told you their whole life story, right? How'd you know? Because it happens all the time, Ma. Okay, fine. And she'd be somewhere, I don't know, what is it about me? They just take one look at me and all of a sudden everyone's pouring out their heart, like strangers on the bus, people at the bank, wherever she is. Like, it's one thing if it's her friends, if it's one thing the people that knows her, people that call her. And we still are not sure all the people that said how they would speak to her all the time. We're still not sure when she found the time to speak to them because she spoke to us all the time. I know she knew all of our schedules and we knew her schedule. So I knew that if I came home from work after 11, that I was going to speak to my mother sometime between 11 and 4 when I went out to get the kids. So if I knew that was my time frame and my sister had her time frame and my brother and my sisters-in-laws and my brothers-in-laws, whoever it was, were trying to figure out when all these people that said they spoke to her all the time, when did she do that? Like, did she not sleep? She probably didn't, but it was just unbelievable to hear how everyone was just so charmed by her. And that actually was an initiative that we began when she first got sick. We started something as a zechus for refua shelema for her. And then later we had changed it to a zechus as a merit for her neshama. And we called it Ateres Racholeya. We called it Atara a crown. It's good enough. Okay, I'll leave these here. We could get them after. An atara is a crown because there is a verse that says, Ataras zekeinim b'nei banim. The crown of the older generation is their children and their grandchildren. So that hence, you know, the play on the word, Ateres and Rachaleah, her name, that we wanted people to, by emulating her midos, by emulating things that she was known for, that should be a merit for her. So we put together this little poem, and it goes like this. Does your Zaidi or Bubby, and we actually have a Sephardi version and a Hebrew version for what people call Zaidi and Bubby. There's a few variations of the same flyer. Live out of town. They must wish you were around to see your cute face and pinch your cheeks. Do you have an elderly neighbor who lives alone to have someone to talk to and see how you've grown? Do you know a resident in a senior home who could use a visitor to call her own to share a smile, a joke, a kind word? You can be the one. In just a few minutes, it can be done. Give a ring, make a call, a knock on the door. That is all it takes to put a smile on a face. Because that's really what she did. There were people on our block. I could think of many examples, but there was one woman on the block, a lonely, lonely old lady who used to call my mother all the time. And my mother used to drop everything and go and help her. She would help her with her shopping. She would sit with her. She would talk to her. And numerous people, we heard stories like that. She had a friend who was divorced. And apparently soon after the divorce, my mother called her one time to wish her a good Shabbos. And unbeknownst to anybody, it must have become a weekly activity or, you know, pretty frequently activity, because in the time since, this woman had remarried and happily remarried. But yet when she heard my mother had passed away, she said, but who's going to call me now on Friday? And so, like, my mother had reached out to her in a time when she needed it. You would think that now the lady doesn't, like, the original purpose of why my mother reached out to her was not there anymore, but it didn't take away from her still needing that phone call and still wanting to hear that voice. So how do we keep this peace, right? This chasing of peace, this emulation of peace, this being like a disciple of Aaron, because it would be so complicated and too high of a bar to set for ourselves to be Aaron. How do we do that? So let's take some examples from the Torah, from real life, that we can apply to how we can do that and then create that ripple effect that we spoke about up before. When Yosef was the king in Mitzrayim, and the whole story of how the brothers came down to buy food, and he wanted Binyamin to come down. So in Parshas Vayigash, this is at the end of the whole saga, where the brothers are down in Mitzrayim, they've already brought Binyamin there, and now Yosef has suggested that they keep Binyamin out in Mitzrayim, bring him down to Mitzrayim, and at this point, Yehuda has had enough. And it says, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda brazenly steps up to Yosef to tell him off, and like, we cannot have Binyamin in Mitzrayim. It's going to kill our father. This just cannot happen. And Yosef recognizes that the situation is very tense. We're about to have a blow up. There's going to be a blowout. Something is going to happen. This is not just a conversation. So Mishlei in relation to this pasuk says, Chamas melech malachei maves, the king's anger is like the angel of death, ve'ish chacham yichaprena, but a wise man will appease it. So the Mefarshim tells us that the king's anger is like the angel of death. That is referring to Yehuda, who was so filled with anger and so upset at this viceroy who was demanding his brother at the expense of the life of his father. But the wise man will appease it. That is talking about Yosef. We know Yosef is wise. He got to his position because of his wisdom and his ability to interpret the dreams of Paro and his ability to save and sustain Egypt for their years of famine. But why? What's so wise about Yosef making a move to prevent a blow-up? What did Yosef do to prevent the blow-up? It tells us it was at that point, Vayomer Yosef Elechav Ani Yosef. At that point, when Yehuda's temper was flaring and there was about to be a blowout, Yosef says, oh, I'm Yosef. How does that diffuse it? How is that? And what's the brains, what's the brilliance of Yosef in that situation? So the mashal, there's a parable that's given that there are two boxers, two athletes who are fighting and tugging at each other and forcing on each other and punching each other out. And one gets a huge blow and he knows he's about to go under. He knows he's about to lose this match. He's going to be on the floor in the corner of the ring. And he doesn't want to be humiliated in front of everybody. He doesn't want to be the loser. He wants to be the champion. So as the opponent is going to sock him, he kisses his hand. He kisses the opponent's hand. And it all of a sudden, it changes the tone of the boxer. That's what Yosef did. It was as if he kissed the hand of his opponent to calm him down. What was the brains in that? You don't want to have a fight, so don't fight. It takes two to tango. You can't have a fight. We tell that to our kids. But he started up with me. I don't care who started up with who. You did something. It takes two of you. You're both fighting. Right? So what did Yosef do? At that moment, when the emotions are so strong, and you're about to get sucked up into a hot dispute or a heated debate, it takes an intellect. It takes a steady mind. It takes a presence of mind to be able to maintain the status quo and not to get sucked in and not to get drawn in. So what we have to do, which is hard, is that there are times when we get sucked in. Somebody is angry at us. Somebody is yelling at us. And we feel that tension and we feel our blood pressure rising. We have to diffuse it. We have to stop. And at that point, when our blood pressure is at its boiling point, use our intellect and stop it and nip it in the bud. Catch it before it becomes the end of Mitzrayim, which is what could have happened had Yosef not stopped at that moment. It could have turned into an all right war between the brothers and the Egyptians. And he was able to stop that. Another thing we can do is see from Avram. The pasuk tells us that Avram dug wells. He worked very hard. Apparently it's not easy. We're spoiled. We have sinks. We turn on the faucet. Water comes out. But Avram had dug wells and they were stolen by Avimelech. And the pasuk tells us, V'hochiach Avram es Avimelech. Avram approached, or he disputed, he argued with Avimelech, al odos be'er hamayim asher gozlu avdei Avimelech. He spoke to him, he argued with him about the wells which were stolen by his servants. So Rashi comments, often brings us very insightful words, powerful words. What does Rashi elaborate over there? He argued about that. Yeah, the pasuk told me that. What does that mean? He argued about that. The pasuk just told me he argued about that. But you have to put the pronunciation, you have to put the emphasis on the word that. He argued about that. Only that. There were lots of things that Avram could have brought up that Avimelech did wrong, taking his wife, for example. But he didn't bring it up at that time. The problem right now was, I had wells. These are mine. Your people stole my wells. We need to talk about that. Not a whole laundry list about everything else that you've done to me and done against me and everything that I remember, and you're this and you're that and you're that. No name calling, no labeling, no remembering everything that the person did from the time they were 2 years old that ever bothered you, that you may or may not have ever spoken to them about before. So again, so we have using our intellect, using our chachma like Yosef to nip it in the bud, use our intellect to keep it out, use our method of Avram of just keep it simple, keep it at what it is. How important is it to keep peace? How important it is Let's look at Avram and Sarah. We're going to look at two examples from Avram and Sarah, who are two of the greatest people. They were the beginning of our avos and our imahos, who these stories happened to them when they were 90 and 100 years old of age, which is certainly, they've been around for a while. I find that as I get older, I still don't think I'm old, but as I get older, old is older, you know? Right? Old seems to push up. But I think that on most people's accounts, 90 and 100 still qualifies as old, okay? You know, it was very cute. I was at a Shopper's Drug Mart picking up some items. And there was a lady online, a senior citizen online, and there was a senior citizen cash personality, you know, doing her order. So the man, ever the gentleman, says, do you qualify for the senior citizen discount? It was quite obvious that she qualified for the senior citizen discount, but, you know, I guess he was being chivalrous. And she looks at him and says, sir, I'm closer to 100 than you are. So it was the first time that I laughed. I thought it was the cutest thing. It was the first time that I had seen anyone proud to be close to 100. But, you know, it was very cute. So, but 90 and 100 is definitely considered up there. So when Avram has his famous guests, his three malachim, the three angels, and they come, two things happen. One thing happens. They come and tell Avram that he is going to have a child. Sarah laughs and says, kind of impossible. My husband's pretty old. And Hashem repeated that to Avram and said, you know what Sarah said? Sarah said that you can't have a child because she's old. But don't worry, because I'm Hashem, I can do anything. It's not what Sarah said. Not at all. Hashem changed the words of Sarah to Avram so as not to slight or embarrass or upset Avram in any degree. Avram is 100. Avram and Sarah have been married for decades. Avram and Sarah have been working together for decades to do their wonderful work, have worked on themselves to become the avos and the imahos that they were, and we all agreed 100 is old. How upset would Avram have gotten? Maybe. But still, Hashem said the importance of shalom is worth it. Even if there's a tiny possibility that there will be a disruption in peace, it's not worth it. Always for the sake of peace. And similarly, when the Malachim came and they said to Avram, where is your wife? Where is Sarah? They knew where Sarah was. Sarah was in the tent. They knew that. But it tells us that they asked him so that she should become endeared to her husband to create shalom between them, so that he would recognize what a special, wonderful wife he had that was doing what she was supposed to be doing and is in the place where she's supposed to be. And how far one has to go to create shalom between people, even couples who have been married for decades at the ages of 90 and 100. Some other practical examples, and then we'll sum up. Most of these examples are from the book Grow Through Tehillim, Rabbi Zelig Pliskin, and then there are some which are also from the Sefer Milos Hamidos, which is one of the classical Musar works. So he tells us that the bracha, as we mentioned in the beginning, the bracha of Hashem is shalom. Hashem's gift to us and Hashem's blessing to us is shalom, is peace. And actually what we see is that any important part of the davening that we have ends with the words shalom or blessing in peace. For example, Berchas Kohanim has shalom in it. Shmona Esrei has the bracha of shalom in it. And in Shema, there's Pares Amo Yisrael. There's also about shalom over there. In Halacha, there are examples of the importance of shalom. And it tells us that if a person is not so financially well off, and they have to make a decision, they have a certain amount of money, and they can only use it for one thing. They have to make a choice of what they're going to use it for. So if a person has an option before them of Ner Beso or Kiddush, a person has enough money. Remember, this is a person who is destitute, clearly, because how much do candles cost? but they could only afford candles for lighting Shabbos candles, or with the same amount of money, they could afford wine for Kiddush. That's all they have. So the halacha is that they don't buy wine for Kiddush, they light candles for their home to create lights and to create shalom in their home, peace in their home. Same too also, if a person has only sufficient funds for Hanukkah candles or for lighting Shabbos candles, again, Shabbos candles comes over the Hanukkah candles because that is, we light candles on Shabbos to create shalom bayis, to create peace in our home, and you know that warmth that envelops us on Friday night when after we light the candles and everything is all done and ready and still. Even in the Aliyos, when men are called to the Torah, the order of how men are called to the Torah was instituted because of shalom, because of peace. Kohen, Levi, and Yisrael, that was to create peace, that there would be an order and an order of the hierarchy of the people and their responsibilities to the Jewish people. Another example of the importance of peace is that generally the rule is that one is not allowed to erase even one letter in the name of Hashem. If Hashem's name is written, we're not allowed to erase it. However, referring back to the Isha Sota, the unfaithful wife that we spoke before, if a woman is suspected of being unfaithful, then there is a verse that is written on a cloth, on a parchment. It has Hashem's name on it, and it has to go inside the special water solution, and in essence, by the parchment going into the water, the name of Hashem gets erased and wiped out. So Hashem says, for the importance of shalom, for importance of proving that this woman's innocent and creating shalom bayis, it's worth it for not only one letter of my name to be erased, but the whole name of Hashem, the entire word of Hashem. So let's see what we can do. Our tone and the content of our words make a difference to what our words will sound like to other people and how other people will hear it. I was just teaching a class today in Navi to my 7th and 8th grade girls, and there was a word in the pasuk that was a question, but it was kind of a rhetorical question. So I asked them to read me the words from the pasuk and tell me what it meant. And when they read the words in that tone of voice and translated it, it didn't make sense in the context of the story. Because the story was that Shaul had just helped the Jewish people fight and win a war against Ammon. But this was soon after he had been anointed as king and wasn't quite accepted by all of the people. But after this war, when everybody recognized that he would indeed be able to help them, they said to Shmuel, the Navi, who anointed him, and they said, whoever says, will Shaul be our king, should be killed. So if you read it, whoever says Shaul will be our king will be killed. That doesn't make sense in the story. Because after this story, everyone is enamored with Shaul and recognizing that he does have the ability to lead. So you have to change your tone of voice, which changes the tone. Whoever says, will Shaul be our king? That person should be killed. You hear the difference? So we were practicing it. We were saying different words and asking how it made us feel. So we gave an example. Nice sweater. Two words. Okay? So you're a girl. You come into the classroom and someone says, nice sweater! How do you feel? Fab, right? Good deal. Come into class and someone goes, nice sweater. Not so good. And then you come into class and someone says, nice sweater? You also like, oh, that was a big mistake. So our tone of voice, our facial expressions, the words of what we say, how we say them, are also just as important of the contents that we say. Because again, we talked about that bubbling, boiling blood pressure. There are certain things that when we hear them or see them or visualize them, they set the tone. and it creates a boomerang of going back and forth, and that causes the two to tango, that causes a conflict. By remembering that the bracha of Hashem is shalom, that will help us to realize the priority of shalom and put it up on our priority list and be committed to speaking in ways that help and promote shalom, to help and promote peace. And we can also prepare ourselves. If we know that we're about to enter a situation which could be challenging, which could lead to a difficult conversation, we can prepare ourselves in advance. The same way an actor, or the same way a person, a professional speaker, will practice their speech. They'll look in front of a mirror. In the olden days, they would tape themselves. Now I guess they put it on an MP3 player. You could look in the mirror to see how your face looks. You could play it so you could play it back to yourself. Plan out the conversation. How do you want this conversation to go? You can think about that out, and you can work it out in advance. Get help if you need help. If you need somebody to be a mediator, if you need somebody to advise you, you could do that also. I was, you know, in preparation for this class, I was looking around my bookshelf, taking books off the shelf, preparing, and I saw a book on my shelf. I don't remember when or why I bought it, but I guess it did the trick, because I don't have any ill feelings when I see this book. The name of the book is called Difficult Conversations: How to Discuss What Matters Most, by Stone, Patton, and Heen. I don't remember why I bought it, but I don't remember anything about it, so I guess that's a good thing. So there's the old 10 trick, right? You can count to 10 to calm yourself down, and then there's also the scale of 1 to 10. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does this really matter? Is this something that I want to be making a big deal about? Is this something that I want to rip apart my relationship with this person about? And we can also actively pursue peace. We can help other people if we see that they have an issue. Obviously, only if we know or we're pretty certain that we can be helpful. If it's going to make things worse, then don't try to, you know, if you, there's even a doubt that, or a possibility that you might make things worse, to stay away from there. And then there's something which is called the Shalom Fund. The Shalom Fund can actually be money, wherein you say, you know what, it's just money. It's not a big deal. He says, I owe her this. She says, I owe her that. You know what, here, take it. I remember once I was in high school, and a girl let me, I was using something that I had borrowed from a girl. It was kind of fairly, not very expensive, but when you're a teenage girl, I think it was like $25. That's expensive for a teenage girl. And I dropped it accidentally, and it broke. And she insisted that I owed her money for it. And I was trying to explain to her that it was an accident. I didn't think I owed her money for it. Like, anybody could have been holding it, and it dropped. I mean, honestly, I didn't want to pay her $25. I didn't think I did anything wrong. So I came home, and I was all upset and all annoyed about this girl. I was like, she let me use it. I was holding it. It dropped. I wasn't being careless with it. I wasn't throwing it around the room. It dropped. And my mother said, Shayna, it is $25. Forget it. Just give her the money, let her get a new one, and it's over. Just forget it. So we have the Shalom Fund where, you know what? Just forget it. It's not important. There are things that are more important than the value of the $25 of whether you really owe it to her or not. There's also the Shalom Fund that's probably a little bit harder than forking over the money, and that's forking over your words, apologizing, saying I'm sorry. It's hard to say I'm sorry when we're wrong. It's hard to admit we're wrong. It's probably even harder to admit that we're wrong when we're not wrong, but if it'll make the other person happy, sometimes it's worth it. Chalk it up to being courageous. Chalk it up to being powerful, to being great. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of maturity. It's a sign of growth, and it's a sign of strength. I'll end with one more story that's not about my mother, but I thought the story was all about this. It ties it all up. Rabbi Shlomo Halberstam was the first Babava Rebbe, and he was going visiting back in Europe. He was going to a city called Lemberg, and he was going to visit an acquaintance, a friend of his, whose name was Rabbi Yitzchak. This Rabbi Yitzchak was an author of several Sfarim, and while he was in this town, he went to visit him. So he's sitting in the study, he's sitting in the office, the two rabbis are together, there's a knock at the door, and a man comes in, he's holding a sefer. So this Rabbi Yitzchak had just published his Sefer. It had just literally hot off the press. The printer had come to deliver the very first copy and gave it over to Rabbi Yitzchak. Here, it's done. Take a look. So Rabbi Yitzchak is looking over it. He's very proud. He feels very good about it. He's very accomplished. He's looking through it and just feeling all, you know, the results of his labor and his hard work. And he passes it over to the Rebbe and he says, Rabbi, take a look at the Sefer. And the Rabbi is looking through it and he's flipping through the pages. And he gets to a page and he looks it. He starts reading and he says, Rabbi Yitzchak, what's going on here? He says, what's the matter, Rabbi? He says, on this page that I'm looking here right now, there is a reference to a psak, to a rabbinic resolution, to a situation that somebody had that happened 30 years ago. And he says, yes, I thought that decision that the rabbi made was very relevant to the case that I was discussing in my book. And he says, do you remember the controversy and the conflict that was caused when that rabbi issued that statement? He says, yeah, but Rebbe, that happened 30 years ago. It doesn't say his name. It doesn't say the details. It's over. It's 30 years ago. And the Rebbe says, I don't think so. I think that the story was so famous and so well known that everyone is immediately going to point to this story. And everyone's going to immediately remember where it came from and why it's here. I really don't think it should be there. You need to take it out. He says, I can't take it out. It's okay. You're just being super sensitive. Besides, I can't take it out. Look, it's printed. The book is bound. It's all printed. I still think you should take it out because maybe it will upset the person who it happened to. It might cause discomfort to the rabbi, and it might cause discomfort to the disciples of the rabbi who see that their rabbi's image is portrayed in an inconceivable light. He says, Rebbe, I'm really sorry, but I just printed them. You know what it costs to print a book. It's a fortune. So the rabbi says, you know what? How about I make a deal with you? I will pay for you to reprint and rebind the first 70 pages of your book so you can leave out the story. I insist upon it. And the man, Rabbi Yitzchak, was shocked. He said, you have no idea how much it costs to reprint and rebind a new book with 70 pages. And the Rebbe said, for shalom, it's worth it. If it's going to even cause and prevent an ounce of somebody being upset and conflict, every penny is worth it. And that is the extent to which Aaron went and to which other people went. And from my mother's example, we see how far she went. And it tells us that when Bnei Yisrael were at Har Sinai, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neger HaHar, and Bnei Yisrael camped opposite Har Sinai, they were Ke'ish Echad B'Lev Echad. They were like one man, one unit. It doesn't say Vayachanu, plural, and they camped. It was 600,000 men, 20 to 60, all the wives and all the children, approximately 3 million people. But the 3 million people were united. They weren't divided. And it was at that point that Hashem was able to give the Torah because 3 million people were united in a peaceful way. So I want to give a bracha to us and a merit to my mother's neshama that as the Torah as our guide and keeping peace as our priority and doing what we can to avoid machlokes, then we also can merit the day when Hashem gives us the ultimate peace and the ultimate rejoining of everybody that's important to us and everyone that means so much to us and taught us so much and gave us so much to make us who we are. Thank you for coming. So there are flyers over here about the little initiative.